We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the RotoWire Prospect Podcast. I'm your host, James Anderson, and I've got Sam Dykstra of MLB Pipeline with me today. We're going to be talking about the most notable minor league assignments, prospects getting assigned to levels, maybe aggressively or just kind of a very soft landing, just interesting level assignments. It's going to be a lot of fun. I did just want to mention off the top that we do have our notes going to So Rare right now, which is a really exciting partnership with So Rare. So very, very excited about that. But Sam, without further ado, what's the first minor league level assignment you want to talk about today?
I feel like there's so much pressure now. This is almost like a draft in some ways, the way we're going to be going back and forth on these. Who am I going to claim first? I'm going to go with somebody who I don't think is a consensus. I mean, I know he's not a consensus top 100 prospect yet, but could very well be at the end of the year. We'll see how things go. Is Yoffrey Rodriguez, outfielder with the Milwaukee Brewers. If you look at the trend lines for the Brewers the last 3 years, there's always been one outfielder signed from the international market that they just push really aggressively. We thought 2 years ago, Jackson Churio was going to be an outlier. And then last year was Luis Lara, who was skipping the Arizona Complex League and opening up with single A Carolina. Now it's Rodriguez's turn. And he's doing that from opening day, which is pretty telling. You look at what Churio and Lara were, especially Lara last year, really good plate discipline, really good speed, a really good defender, didn't have a ton of power. But they're hopeful that that could kind of come along the way. Rodriguez, I think, has more power, has a better chance of being a well-rounded five-tool player, maybe in that line of Churio. I don't think he's quite as fast, but has those in place. And, you know, talking to Brewers people in the offseason, they were like, yeah, he's somebody we were prioritizing getting over to Arizona this spring and getting him around players and just getting him in that environment. And apparently he passed all the tests and now he's opening up in Carolina at just age 18. I'm really fascinated to see what happens to him from here. I mean, we saw Churio climb three levels in 22. Luis Lara made high A Wisconsin by the end of the year. What will Rodriguez do? We'll have to wait and see, but really promising that he's opening in single A to start the season.
Yeah, that was one of the most obvious ones out there. One of the most kind of meaningful assignments, I think, for everything you kind of laid out. And I've been getting a lot of questions about Rodriguez. I kind of ranked him as sort of a borderline top 100 guy coming into the year. And just a lot of like, well, what is this guy going to be? What's the ceiling? And I don't really like to kind of do that necessarily with Dominican Summer League prospects because they're just so early in their development. We don't really know what these guys are going to look like when they're 22, 23, et cetera. But my big takeaway from Rodriguez in the DSL was that at least so far, I don't really see any flaws in his game.
No, not really. I mean, I think the only 50s I gave him were for fielding and throwing. Everything else is at least 55 right now, which, again, was not the case with Alara, you know, looking back. And even Jackson Churio had some, like, throwing questions, right? He was still transitioning from shortstop, which is what he played as an amateur, to the outfield. There were still some speed bumps along the way. Now we're seeing him as, obviously, a really good defensive outfielder. But maybe even Rodriguez has a little bit of a head start in terms of tools already. I like what you were saying about it's tough to judge guys in the DSL. You look at his numbers, he had a 393 OBP. That looks great, but also the DSL, a lot of guys don't know where they're throwing the ball. Right. So it's great to have discipline and not swing at those crazy pitches that are a foot outside, but also what happens when he's going to be challenged by single A guys who have much better command. That's going to be a huge test.
Yeah, and one thing in his DSL stat line that stood out to me is like the 289 BABIP. That's a pretty low BABIP for the DSL. You said guys don't know where they're throwing it. You know, it's, you expect guys to put up higher BABIPs there because the defense just isn't that great. So I wouldn't read too much into his 253 average last year. Okay, so my next pick. All right, I'm going to start with Sebastian Walcott getting assigned to High A Hickory. I kind of had to do a double take on that one, and just, you know, I was almost kind of cautious about even going with it when I first saw it, just because it was so surprising to me. You know, he obviously really, you know, he's a kind of the talk of the lower minors for a point last summer, just because of how loud his tools were. He got that early jump from the Dominican Summer League to complex ball. But the, you know, the strikeout rate was very high in the complex league. And, you know, I know he briefly played at Hickory towards the end of last year, but I just assumed he would be going to single A. And even then, I kind of assumed he might spend the whole year at single A, just depending on where the hit tool was this year. So what did you make of the Rangers sending Walcott to High A to start his age 18 season?
Yeah, I mean, that was a fascinating one for me, too, for all the reasons you laid out, especially the hit tool. I mean, that's something you want kind of bang on solidified before a guy climbs the ladder. And you know, maybe that strikeout rate starts climbing into the 30s or 40s even with somebody like Walcott. I mean, it was fascinating for him last year. I know everybody made a lot of hay out of him moving out of the DSL, but I think that was a special case, not just because of the skills, but he's a guy who was signed out of the Bahamas. So sending him to the Dominican is that's a whole other country. That's a whole other language he's around. I think he was just honestly going to be more comfortable in the Arizona Complex League, even though that's basically a half step up. But the way they aggressively pushed him, the way the Rangers have aggressively pushed Evan Carter last year and Wyatt Langford, you know, at the tail end of last year and this year too, maybe there's something there. I mean, maybe they are kind of buying into that Padres school of, hey, the really talented guys, they figure it out. And if they've got tools, that they're going to play anywhere, and we want to throw you in the deep end and get you challenged. There seems to be a trend there going with Texas. And, you know, they're coming off a World Series, so something's working.
Yeah, Walcott turned 18 20 days ago. So I would assume he'll be not only the youngest hitter, but maybe the youngest player to open the year at High A this year. Does that seem...
Oh, one, yeah, he'll definitely be among the youngest, if not the youngest.
Yeah. So I guess to me, it's kind of we'll sort of see. We'll see how he does. And if he's ready for High A right now, like if we don't see sort of obvious, you know, he's overmatched a little early on, there's kind of a growing pains out of the gate. Like if he just hits the ground running at High A, I mean, we're kind of off to the races, right? Like I would expect him to be below league average. I don't really know why I would expect him to be better than that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the difficult thing, right, is they're doing this for his long-term development, and maybe they think the best thing to improve that hit tool is to get looks at better pitching. And, you know, that's going to be the difficult part on our part to adjust and evaluate for that, because, like, if he's striking out 30, 35% of the time in the first 2 months and we all get worried, you have to remember this context of him being just 18 years old and them wanting him to see that and adjust over time. You know, that's, we're going through that now in the major leagues, right? A lot of people are trying to check themselves from getting too freaked out about stuff early. We really need to remember that on the minor league side too.
All right, Sam. So we've selected two 2023 J15 signees to start things off here, in Yofri Rodriguez with the Brewers, and Sebastian Walcott with the Rangers. Who's the third prospect whose assignment stood out to you?
Yeah, this one, I'll go to the Mets system on this one. And this one is Ryan Clifford, their number four prospect for us, outfielder / first baseman. They got him from the Astros last year in the Justin Verlander deal, along with Drew Gilbert. He's headed back to High A Brooklyn, which shouldn't be that shocking, right? Like on some level, he was a 2022 high school pick. He's only 20 years old. He played a bit of High A last year, both in the Astros system and in the Mets system. With the Cyclones last year, he had a 683 OPS. Not like he tore the cover off the ball. But you know, looking at his power numbers, they were really good. He had 24 homers in his age 19 season. That was among the best for teenagers anywhere. It's real, at least above average power, if not plus power. That's what pushes him into a lot of top 100 lists. And the reason why I'm a little surprised he's back in Brooklyn is because he's a left-handed hitter, and Brooklyn kills left-handed hitters. I don't know if I'm sure many people are aware they Brooklyn Cyclones play on Coney Island. The beach is just beyond right field. It's a great setting to watch a ball game, but you're going to get some breeze coming in off that. Also, the batter's eye is really difficult for lefties, and I talked to Ryan Clifford about that a little bit. Adjusting going from Asheville, which is an extreme hitter's park, right, to Brooklyn, it's a bit of an adjustment. And he said there were times, never mind the wind coming off the beach, it was difficulty seeing the ball. And I thought maybe the Mets thinking like, okay, we don't want to put you in that environment to begin with this year. Yes, Double A is a bit of a stretch, but at least it's a fair setting for you to thrive. I think that was being discussed by the Mets. They ended up holding him back, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if like Clifford doesn't last a month with Brooklyn. But it was just an interesting one to me. I felt like that was a bit of a coin flip, and the fact that they held him back is at least telling of something.
Yeah, definitely. And 90 games under his belt already at High A. So and great to point that out with the park at Brooklyn. One of these days I want to just have an episode just talking about minor league park factors, because that's like an hour long discussion just in itself. But
you could do an hour long on each level. Yeah. For some of these things, I mean, it's insane how Asheville affects things and how Brooklyn affects things. And you go back to the days of like Lancaster in the Cal League, man.
So when you're talking about, you know, he's got 90 games at that level already, but he's going to a park that is going to be hard for him to do damage in as a lefty. So what are you kind of looking for in his stat line early this season? Should we be kind of just looking at the strikeouts and walks, and if power's not quite there, we're just not that worried about it?
I mean, I would pay attention to home road splits. You can get those on MILB.com. Those are going to be huge for him coming up. I don't have the Brooklyn schedule in front of me, but like that is just something to note when we're about 3-4 weeks in. And the big thing for him isn't necessarily the stat line. It's where they're playing him. Because they split him, both teams, the Astros and Mets, split him between the outfield and first base. Talking to the Mets, that's going to continue. They're going to rotate him through all those spots. If he's a first baseman, he really, really needs to show that power. If he's getting four starts in left and right field and two at first base, all right, then I feel a little bit more comfortable that you can maybe stick it on the grass. So those are some things I'm going to be paying attention to. But I think primarily for me, because he's in Brooklyn, it'll be on the defensive side for the first few weeks.
Okay, so the next guy I want to talk about here is the Rockies assigning Jordan Beck to AAA Albuquerque. And Jordan Beck, for anyone who hasn't been paying attention, well, he turns 23 later this month. So he's age appropriate for AAA, but through 19 plate appearances, he's got two homers, he's hitting .357, and he's got seven strikeouts. So basically a 37% strikeout rate, 21% walk rate through those four games. And I was surprised that they sent Beck to AAA. Not obviously he's the right age for it. He certainly is a physical specimen who would fit right in among those types of players. But he played 50 games last year at AA. He had a 32% strikeout rate. He hit .240. He was still better than league average just because he was walking a ton, and he's going to walk a ton wherever he goes. But just felt like, you know, the Rockies, they can be aggressive sometimes with guys like Ezekiel Tovar, but it seems like a lot of times with the college bats, they really kind of go, you know, level to level, and they don't necessarily push guys that much. So I thought it'd just be, you know, a soft landing back at AA. He rakes for a couple months and he goes to AAA, but the fact that they sent him directly to AAA, Jordan Beck, this year, you know, it tells me that maybe he's a little bit closer to reaching the majors than I thought maybe a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, for sure. And talk about park factors. I mean, that's another one to keep in mind, too, with Jordan Beck. I mean, him going deep like he did over the weekend was great. But he's doing that in Albuquerque, which is playing at elevation. He'll have to get used to it. I mean, that's not a bad thing for a Rockies player. But yeah, I mean, I was a little surprised by that as well.
it's one of those key instances, and I'm sure this is a phrase we're going to come back to a lot, is the teams will say one thing about a player publicly. The most telling thing about their belief in a player is where they place them. That says as much as anything. I mean, they like the players they have, but to get that aggressive with Jordan Beck is telling that they think he's ready for the challenge of AAA. It's a different environment for many reasons, starting with the ABS system, which is going to be used in full for half the week, and then the challenge system for the second half of the week. Maybe they think that's something he can do better with, is a more refined zone and defined zone. But the tools are going to play, and especially in Albuquerque, if he can elevate the ball like he did over the weekend, he's going to send a lot of balls far away.
Yeah, I mean, you're dead on in terms of just actions over words with these teams and where they're sending guys. You know, where you send a prospect at the beginning of the season sort of sets up their entire season. You know, it's like, are we sending them to an easy situation to kind of ease them into things? Are we going to test them right off the bat? So, I mean, I'm looking at Jordan Beck, and, you know, the Rockies don't really have you know, they've got Nolan Jones, they got Chris Bryant, you know, is Brenton Doyle an everyday player? Maybe. Where do you sort of see Jordan Beck fitting in for these guys? And let's just say he has a good run here at AAA. Do you think we could see him this summer?
I definitely think we could see him at some point this summer, because of all the things you've said, like the fact that he's an above average runner, he's got a good arm, he can field, like he can do some things right away in the majors. And if you look at the Rockies, like you said, like, yeah, they have some good outfield options. I don't know how much you can count on Chris Bryant.
Yeah.
To like coming off playing what, half a season last year, an OPS below 700. I'm not saying they're going to make him a bench option or something, but injuries might creep up again. I think it's a possibility we see Jordan Beck by the All-Star game.
Yeah, that'd be very interesting, because he's definitely got a lot of tools, and you know, if the hit tool is the most kind of up in the air tool, playing half your games in Coors Field can help with that.
For sure.
So yeah, I just didn't even think of Beck as like a realistic, you know, middle of the season type of guy, and then that assignment to AAA certainly opens that up. And, you know, point well received on Chris Bryant there. They're certainly going to be paying him a lot of money for a long time, so I can't imagine that they'd be wanting to plan around being without him early this season. But you know, the proof is kind of in the pudding there. All right, who's the next assignment that you want to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, this guy was definitely going to be on my list. I guess we should just stick at AAA, because I like some of the points we were building on there. Is Colson Montgomery, yeah, of the Chicago White Sox. 22nd overall pick in 2021, only 22 years old this year, was limited to only 64 games last year. 37 of those were with AA Birmingham, which he got a small cup of coffee with in 2022 when they were putting all of their prospects with the Barons. They called it Project Birmingham at the time, but just didn't have ample upper level experience, and now he's getting pushed to AAA Charlotte. I think part of this is the player. I mean, you're going to hear this all the time with Colson Montgomery. I'm going to repeat it now. He gets Corey Seager comps a lot as a big shortstop, as a left-handed hitting shortstop with power. He can play the position pretty well for his size, for sure. We're in the kind of that age of the shortstop. He's 6'3". They sent him to the Arizona Fall League last year. Was pretty good there. Wasn't necessarily like one of the hottest hitters by any means, but you know, he was the guy with the target on his back in every lineup, because everybody knew he had top 10 overall prospect upside. And now the White Sox, you know, what is the status of the White Sox? So much of it is on this farm system. They bolted it up with trades for Dylan Cease and some of these other moves. And you know, they need to be kind of looking towards the future. Putting Colson Montgomery one stop away helps with that view. Now, is Colson Montgomery going to be up by the All-Star break? That's a little bit tougher for me to say, because he is younger than Jordan Beck. He's not a college guy. He didn't get a lot of playing time last year. He's going to be somebody who could struggle in this first month, but I think needs to take that month to adjust to AAA pitching. But I don't know. It was just fascinating to see him get pushed that aggressively. But the White Sox have had him now for going on 3 years. they've liked him at every stop. They just need him to be healthy. And if that happens this year, he could give White Sox fans at least a glimmer of hope that a superstar is coming.
Yeah, it almost seems to me like I kind of feel like the team is almost doing Montgomery a bit of a disservice with sort of how many eggs they're putting in that basket and to have it happen like early this year, because that sort of seems what it is, right? Like they aren't carrying sort of a real, you know, everyday big league shortstop on the roster right now, and they give him this aggressive assignment to AAA. So it's pretty clear the writing's on the wall. Like, when we think Colson Montgomery's ready, we're going to call him up. He's going to be our shortstop. And I don't think he's I think he's got a very strong long-term outlook as a just a real life shortstop. But I don't think he's going to necessarily be ready to make a major impact and kind of be the savior that I think a lot of White Sox fans are hoping for this summer if he does get the call this year. I don't know if you disagree with that at all.
No, definitely. And I think you look at where the White Sox are right now, they're not going to be competitive this year.
No.
So they don't need to call him up necessarily. I mean, it would be great if he's ready, but if he's got a 750 OPS, which is okay, but not great, like they're not really in it to just have a better option at shortstop. They want the fully formed Colson Montgomery. So getting him these AAA reps is good for the long term, not necessarily for the short term for the player, but if he can at least see this level of pitching and adjust over a 1 month, 2 month span, and then maybe come up August or September, that's totally fine for the White Sox timeline right now.
All right. If anyone's listening or watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe to the RotoWire YouTube channel. We're going to head to a quick message from our sponsors. And when we're back, I will talk about a starting pitcher who got assigned to AAA that I kind of was surprised by. So keep it tuned here.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's a new baseball season, and that means it's time for MLB DFS on Rival Fantasy. If you want to make everyday draft day, try out Rival Fantasy's daily and weekly MLB best ball. Draft a squad for a single day slate or an entire week of games. Play the matchups and home road splits without worrying about waiver pickups or daily roster management. Drafting isn't your thing. Rival Fantasy has Fantasy Bingo, a salary cap free DFS game. Fill out your squad and try to complete achievements on your bingo card. Get 5 in a row or 4 in a corner to win. Then there's challenges. Pick which player will score more fantasy points in head-to-head matchups. DFS has never been easier. Go to joinrival.com/rotowire or use code rotowire at sign up to get $200 in a deposit match plus $25 in free entries. If you're ready to play fantasy sports made for sports fans, it's time to play Rival Fantasy. Finally, baseball is back. This MLB season, knock it out of the park with Vivid Seats and score great tickets to the biggest games of the year. Every fastball, every home run, every eye-popping play of your favorite team live and in person. Plus, with Vivid Seats rewards, you earn rewards with every single purchase. Just buy 10 tickets, then cash in your credit reward, your free 11th ticket. Talk about an easy win. And here's a pro reward tip. When buying tickets for your whole group, split the bill and make progress towards your free 11th ticket even faster. From behind the dugout to the upper deck, Vivid Seats has great tickets for all the 2024 games that matter to you. Just visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. See vividseats.com/rewards for terms and conditions. Can certain weather conditions lead to more home runs? The atmosphere can affect how far a ball flies by 20%. Home run forecast measures the weather conditions at a ballpark to tell us the atmosphere is good or bad for ball flight during a game. An index value that rates the air is created for each game and ballpark and is displayed on a scale from 1 to 10. Home Run Forecast's premium site offers index values by the hour for each game, 24-hour forecasts, wind direction and speed, and even whether the roof will be open at certain times. Home Run Forecast is offering a special for the start of the baseball season. You can get access to the premium site for the entire season for only $28, a savings of nearly 30%. Go to homerunforecast.com/roadwire now to sign up. All right, Sam, we're back. And the AAA pitcher that I wanted to talk about is Carson Wisenhunt with the Giants. You know, he obviously we've seen really impressive flashes from Wisenhunt, but he only made it AA last year and only made 6 starts there and dealt with an elbow sprain towards the end of last season. So I kind of assumed they would send him back to AA, you know, maybe for a month or two and then send him to AAA, but sending Wisenhunt directly to AAA, and especially now that it seems he's back and fully healthy, you know, he's one step away from the majors, and you know that's obviously a great home park to pitch.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed that assignment, just selfishly because AAA we have Statcast data on, and Carson Wisenhunt's best pitch is his changeup, which is just deadly. I saw it a few years ago in the Arizona Fall League. I mean, it felt like he was telling guys it was coming, and they just couldn't. It was dipping below bats consistently. That worked out pretty well for him in his first start there with the Rivercats, getting 6 strikeouts and 3 scoreless innings. I think it's just a stuff thing. I mean, yeah, it would be nice for him to get a little extra time in AA and really shove there and prove like I'm ready for AAA. But, you know, the Giants have watched him pitch. They feel good enough about his health. They gave him 3 innings. They're easing him in. They're not shoving him into the deep end right away. And I think the stuff could play. I mean, especially that changeup, but he's got a pretty good fastball. He's got a curveball too. It's okay control. He just needs to be out on the mound as much as possible. So if you think the stuff's AAA ready, get him out there and show it is. And you know, we'll see what time he makes the major leagues. Pitching depth is always a question mark for every organization. And the Giants have aspirations of obviously competing this year without the offseason moves they made. So even if Wisenhunt down the stretch is somebody who they use in little bits here and there for lefty-lefty matchups or even righty-lefty matchups because of the quality of the changeup, they just want him getting ready and being an option down the stretch. So it's an aggressive one, but one I like. I'm all in favor of this one.
Yeah, it struck me as sort of a let's give this arm a chance to get to the big leagues before he suffers another injury.
Well, that too. Yeah. Could be
because like he, you know, they've got Mason Black at AAA. You know, they've got some other solid pitching prospects there, but, you know, an opening in that rotation will pop up at some point this season, even once they get, you know, kind of fully formed with their big league starters. But I think Wisenhunt, like now that he's at AAA, whenever that opening is there, you know, Mason Black's logged more time at AAA, but if Wisenhunt's pitching better, neither guy's on the 40-man roster. So I think by sending him to AAA, you're kind of saying, hey, if you're healthy and you're pitching well, maybe you're the guy that gets the call when an opening pops up.
Yeah, I mean, you look at like Ricky Tiedemann, and this isn't, I'm not choosing Ricky Tiedemann. Ricky Tiedemann going to AAA Buffalo is not an aggressive assignment by any means. He actually appeared there, but he too was dealing with injury issues last year, and you have to think both Wisenhunt and Tiedemann are on some sort of innings cap for this year. Now, where would you rather have their innings be if you think it's major league quality stuff right now?
Yeah.
Do you want it being quote unquote wasted at AA, or do you want it like helping out the big league club if you think they can get major leaguers out now? It's going to be fascinating decisions. What happens if those guys are up against 110, 120 innings come, you know, August, you know, fingers crossed, knock on wood, all that stuff. Those are great positions for the Giants and Jays to be, but they, like I said, both teams have aspirations of competing down the stretch, and they don't want to have those guys be non-options because they hit their innings cap.
Yeah, will definitely be interesting to track, and hopefully Wisenhunt can remain healthy this season. Who's the next assignment, or which player's assignment do you want to discuss next, Sam?
This one, it's a twofer, and I'm going to go to the Washington Nationals system, but it's not about James Wood at AAA, and it's not about Dylan Cruz at AA. It's about Brady House and Yohandy Morales being on the same team. Both of those guys are at AA Harrisburg. Not a huge shock on the House spot by any means. He climbed three levels last year, was coming off a back injury in 2022. Was obviously supremely successful last year. I think he hit above 300. The power is certainly there. It's a lot of loud contact. He moved from shortstop to third base permanently. He's a better fit there given his size and his throwing ability. But now he's at AA Harrisburg, and last year they drafted Yohandy Morales in the second round out of Miami. They were doing cartwheels in that draft room, or so I'm told, when they were able to get him 40th overall. He's got plus power. He's drafted as a third baseman too. So now you've got two of your best third base prospects on the same team, and it seems like Morales is going to be the one who's moving over to first base. You know, he might cycle through DH, and House will cycle through DH, so then Morales can move over to third base himself here and there. But it's just a fascinating decision for me because it's kind of, again, a sign of, hey, this is the group that we think is going to be impacting Washington quite soon. We want Morales being challenged. We don't want him going to Wilmington, which is an extremely pitcher-friendly park, and kind of wallowing there just so we can get him third base reps. We'd much rather get him first base reps because that's probably where he's going to be landing if all works out and House is the long-term solution at third. So it's just a fascinating decision. I don't disagree with it. I think it's a good one. If you think these guys are ready, they clearly think Morales is ready for AA. I watched him this year at West Palm Beach. He was fitting right in with that group. It looked like it was his second or third spring training, not his first, like a guy just trying to get his legs underneath him. I think he's going to hit the ball pretty well at AA and adjust pretty well there. So have your core together, have your guys playing together, unless it's somebody like James Wood, who clearly needs the challenge of AAA. But get these guys used to playing with each other and starting in that lineup. And I think we're looking at a possibility that Wood, Cruz, House, Morales, all of those guys are in a major league lineup together by September.
Yeah, it's a really good point on House and Morales. And I mean, unless they think, you know, like Juan Yepez is the long-term first baseman, they don't really have another first baseman in the system. So Morales moving to first base long term to make way for House makes sense to me. So yeah, that's a loaded AA roster. You know, I know you weren't bringing up Dylan Cruz to discuss the assignment at AA. I think that was a logical assignment for him, but I will just say I'm very interested to see how Dylan Cruz does at AA because, you know, obviously struggled there last year in a small sample, surprisingly so. I mean, I think most guys from that class that got to AA handled it fairly well. And Cruz didn't put up great numbers, didn't put up great numbers at spring training. And that'll all just look like long, you know, stuff that just doesn't matter, stuff in the rearview mirror if Cruz has a really good first, you know, 6-8 weeks at Double A. But if I'm just interested to see how Cruz starts, because if he struggles out of the gate and then we're starting to look at like, okay, like 40 games, 50 games, 60 games at Double A, and he's not really dominating, I think that would be noteworthy. But I expect him to do quite well in a return to Double A.
Yeah, I don't want to like give him tons of excuses, but I think Wyatt Langford threw everybody off, like as to like what is normal. What Wyatt Langford did last year was not normal by any means. But Dylan Cruz coming off a long spring, going to the College World Series, Wyatt Langford did too. And again, do credit to him. It was just a longer spring than you're even having for traditional college bats. And then this spring being your first spring training, and they really pushed out the boat. Like they got him a lot of time on the major league side, which doesn't often happen. Like you might see those guys come over for a game or two a week. He was acting like a potential starting, you know, opening day center fielder for them. Not that I think that was really ever in the cards, but like the way they got him playing time, they really prioritized that. So it's just a lot on his plate every day between the last fall and this spring. And I think once he's at a more age appropriate level, at a place that he's already seen, has a little bit of comfortability with it, I think we could see him take off, you know, starting on Friday.
Okay, so you did kind of a 2-4 on the last one with Brady House and Yohandy Morales playing the infield together for Washington at Double A. I'm really interested by the players the Cubs sent to Double A Tennessee. You know, I think James Triantos was definitely going to go there because he barely played there last year. I think Triantos is going to just mash at Double A until he gets promoted to Triple A. But then you got Cade Horton and Matt Shaw. I would consider this a very sort of soft landing spot for those two. I would expect them to both have a lot of success. And I'm particularly interested in the Cade Horton assignment to Double A because it just sort of seems like you can kind of read between the lines, like stuff Craig Breslow was saying on his way out the door last year. It just seems to me like Cade Horton is kind of put the finishing touches on his development already in the minors. So what do you make of them sending Horton to Double A? Like I've sort of got a theory that they're going to kind of slow play him this season and try to have him be in the majors for the second half of the season and maybe into the postseason. But what did you make of the Cade Horton assignment to Double A? And maybe if you have any thoughts on Matt Shaw as well.
Yeah, I think with Horton, like you said, they are slow playing him. It's a soft landing. I wonder how much of this is just given his recent history and the fact that he had Tommy John surgery just a couple of years ago. They're trying to treat him a little bit delicately. Now, compare that to the Giants and what we were saying, like Carson Wisenhunt has had elbow problems too, and they're not doing that as much on the Giants side. So it is a fascinating decision. I just wonder how much of that has to do with like, hey, Cade Horton, we really like you. We just want you passing every test along the way because of that health and the way you were really ramped up through 2023. So last year, 88 in the third innings, they're probably targeting, you know, 120 for him, maybe a little bit more this season. But, you know, if you want him in the majors by the second half and the Cardinals are really, or not the Cardinals, the Cubs, excuse me, you know, obviously want to compete in that NL Central and use whatever they can get, but at least get Cade Horton really rounded off and off to a strong start. That has to be part of the calculus for them, it seems like. I would have put him in Iowa. I think the slider could certainly get AAA guys out right now, and the stuff is good, and the control was really good last year as well. But I think they just want to treat him with a little bit softer gloves because of his history.
Do you well, I'll be interested to see how much he's pitching in these games also.
Yeah, like, that too, for sure.
I think I'd be surprised if all of a sudden Cade Horton's going like five innings every start at Double A. Because he, like you said, he's not going to get to 150 this year, regardless of where you start him. So I would expect them to maybe go kind of like three innings per start with him, something like that early on, maybe skip some turns. But do you see them, are the Cubs one of these teams where you expect their guys to go to Triple A before getting the call of the big leagues? Could you see a scenario where they pull a guy from Double A directly?
I mean, it's always possible. I don't think the Cubs necessarily are the team to do that.
Right.
They
haven't really done that historically.
Yeah. Like PCA at least saw AAA last year before he got up to Chicago. Iowa's not exactly a place you need to avoid. It's not in the Pacific Coast League anymore. So you're not really worried about like sending Cade Horton and all of a sudden he has to go to El Paso and Albuquerque and gets shelled there and, or shelled against like that. I think they're probably wanting him to see Iowa at some point. This might just be like a month long assignment in Tennessee to get his bearings and then move from there.
Sure. Sure. And, I could kind of see Horton maybe and Shaw getting the bump together. Because I don't know. It just seemed like the way they were using Shaw in big league camp.
Yeah.
It's very clear that the third base job is sort of his long-term, assuming his arm is up for it. They've kind of cleared that spot on the depth chart. Obviously the guys that are playing at third base now are not like, I don't expect the Cubs to build around Nick Madrigal at third base or anything like that. So it just sort of seems like those, like Horton and Shaw, are huge pieces for this team long-term. I'm kind of expecting them both to debut in the big leagues this summer and maybe even in Horton's case in the first half. But do you think we might be waiting longer than that on those two?
If I had to guess, I would have said second half for Horton. But I think definitely both of them will be options by late July, early August.
Sure.
That type of like, it's the everybody's favorite phrase around July 31st, right? Like they're basically a trade deadline addition.
When yeah. You're a callable prospect.
I think both of those guys are probably going to fit that.
Okay. What's another assignment that caught your eye?
Well, this one, I almost led off with this one. It's Nelson Rada, top Angels prospect going to AA. I feel like we're going to do this every year, right? It's the Angel prospect who just skips high A and goes to AA. Last year was Edgar Caro, who's now with the White Sox. Now it's Nelson Rada. Only turned 18 last August, so this is still his age 18 season. And now he's headed off to AA Rocket City. Really good hit tool for him. Steals a lot of bags, which is obviously valuable in today's environment. The Angels just don't like sending guys to the Northwest League to start the year. It's cold up there. It is pitcher friendly. They don't want these guys' confidence being killed. I'm a little surprised, though, still. Like, you look at Edgar Caro last year, and a lot of people thought he was a top 100 prospect going into the year, and he really struggled with that aggressive assignment offensively to begin the year, and the shine kind of came off of him. He could, like, play back his way into the top 100. He was a little bit on the periphery for us when we were putting together our list. And Nelson Rada, somebody without power. I mean, he slugged 346 in the Cal League last year. This is pretty aggressive. I don't expect that power to play this year automatically either. I don't think we're going to get up to a 400 just because he's a year older. But the powers or the speed is certainly going to work. He can play a capable outfield as well. He's got a strong throwing arm. Pieces are there. I'm just fascinated again by the Angels doing this and putting another guy on the fast track.
Yeah, you know, I think he did as well as could have been expected last year with the assignment to single A. Really controls the zone. So you hope that he's at least not going to be overmatched in terms of strikeouts at double A. But like you said, it's hard to see him really working on that, getting that any in-game power with that assignment as basically being the youngest hitter at double A now. So yeah, I don't know. We'll see with Rada. Do you think he's what type of stolen base output are you projecting for Rada? Let's say he gets to the big leagues and he's kind of getting developed as sort of a leadoff type of guy for them.
Yeah,
he's obviously put up major stolen base totals in the minors, but do you see him as like a 20 steal guy, 30 steal guy? Where do you sort of see that speed fall?
I would say at least 30 or 40. Especially the way the game is trending now. I think this is the year where we're really going to see steals take another jump just because everybody's like, okay, so we got away with it last year. What is that next gear? And, you know, Victor Scott II, obviously now in the majors, has talked about this a bunch. He thinks it's possible to get 100 steals. And he's going to be pushing that envelope as much as he can, no matter where he is. And I think a lot of people are going to follow that. You look at guys like, well, Esther Ruiz is now in AAA, obviously, and that's a whole can of worms we don't need to open right now. But the you know, guys like Corbin Carroll, Bobby Witt Jr., Ronald Acuna Jr., like these guys want to run. And Nelson Rod is right in that category. So I think, by the time he makes the majors, he could get at least 40, if not 50. He did 55 last year in the Cal League, and I think he's going to keep that pedal to the metal.
So Paul was wondering in the comments, he was asking about Christopher Morel at third base for the Cubs. Like, yeah, you know, Morel's playing third base against righties and DHing against lefties. I guess I just, based on the Cubs' track record with using Morel at third base over the years, I just get the sense that they aren't that comfortable with it. But, maybe if he just kind of is fringe average at third base, I think he hits enough to play there for them. But, yeah, I don't know. I think Matt Shaw is going to play for them somewhere. So it just seems like third base is the spot. My next assignment. This guy definitely had quite a spring, had quite an Arizona Fall League, had quite a 2023 regular season when he played, Chase DeLauder. He's basically just destroyed the ball at every stop dating back to high school. I guess I'm not that familiar with what Chase DeLauder did in high school, but I assume he destroyed the ball there too. He was probably the Guardians' best hitter in spring training, although he only played in like a handful of games. But DeLauder heading to AA to start the year, obviously has not played many games at all, well under 100 pro games to date after being the 16th overall pick in the 2022 draft. I think he's pretty close to big league ready. now the Guardians, certainly not a team that's going to be pushing the boundaries of aggressive promotions or anything like that. But how long do you see DeLauder spending at AA this year?
Yeah, that's a great question. He's another guy where I could see it only being a month. I mean, like you said, he's just passed every test everywhere he's been. He just had these kind of freak foot injuries continually popping up. But we saw him healthy in the AFL. We saw him healthy this spring. It's interesting watching him hit because he's got a little bit of that scissor approach that it just seems to work for him. So you don't touch it until it starts failing, and it hasn't so far. But I really like the power. And what is the biggest thing that Cleveland has lacked in the last few years? It's been power. That's why they took Davison De Los Santos in the Rule 5 draft, because they're like, hey, this guy's available. Let's see if he can fill a hole. It didn't quite work out. But getting somebody like DeLauder just healthy and back in Akron after he only played 6 games there last year, I think that's all it is just like, hey, let's just at least say you played here. And if you're batting above 320 again and slugging above 500 again and stealing some bases, Columbus isn't that far. It's not a far drive from Akron to Columbus. So they can move him up just as easily, but at least get him a little bit more exposure to AA, I think, is the thinking process here. And if he keeps his momentum going, as I fully expect, Columbus by early May won't be an issue.
Yeah, it's kind of it's the path of least resistance almost. It's kind of like, well, we expect you to just dominate a AA, so just go dominate for a few weeks and then we'll bump you to AAA. But if for whatever reason you don't, then you're just stuck there until you do. But I don't know. I think it would be nice to see DeLauder in the big leagues kind of around or shortly after Kyle Manzardo, just kind of given the depth chart. I mean, it's got to be tough for Guardians fans to sort of see Will Brennan out there, Ramon Laureano out there, sort of knowing what you've got waiting in the wings. But I guess
it was really interesting this spring because a lot of people thought DeLauder was like a non-roster invite. And I don't think he was even that. Like they didn't have to announce that he's been sent down to minor league camp. They just brought him over a ton. And he kept performing like he was in camp the whole time. But no, he was coming from the minor league side.
Right. It was confusing because of how much he played, right?
Yeah, like totally.
Teams do this with their top prospects all the time, but it's usually not to just regularly be in the big league lineup.
Yeah.
Who's the next guy you want to talk about?
Yeah, kind of continuing on just the soft landing and a guy who didn't play much at this level last year, but I think people were maybe thinking it would be a little bit more aggressive, is Ethan Salas of the San Diego Padres. every time anybody wrote about him in the offseason, they always had to say, this is a guy who made double A at age 17. And how crazy is that? And when that gets written a lot, I think a lot of people were thinking, okay, he's going back to the Texas League to start his second season. That's not what happened. He's going back to High A Fort Wayne, which gets lost in the shuffle. He was only there 9 games last year. He spent bulk of the year at single A Lake Elsinore. The reason why he was called up to double A San Antonio is the Missions were in a playoff race down the stretch, and the Padres had a lot of prospects there. Graham Pauly was there. Jacob Marcy was there. Robbie Snelling was there. They wanted those guys concentrated at one level, getting used to playing with each other in really competitive environments. Salas suffered an injury. That's why he was limited at San Antonio, but now he goes back to Fort Wayne. He'll still be one of the youngest players there. We were talking about, Sebastian Walcott before. Ethan Salas won't turn 18 himself until June 1st. So he's still only 17. The defense plays anywhere. Like, he could catch AAA right now, and I don't think he would have an issue. He could maybe even catch the majors. They put him on the major league side a bunch this year. Guys were raving about how good he is, how advanced he is behind the plate with his movements and his arm strength. It's really good power. It's now power over hit, I think, as a left-handed bat. I just want to see what he's going to be like in the Midwest League for a little bit longer. So this wasn't a surprise by any means, but I think a lot of people got so caught up in how quickly San Diego was pushing Salas that it might have at least, caused a little bit of whiplash. But, they'll get right back on that aggression train if Salas proves himself in Fort Wayne like we kind of expect him to.
What are your kind of baseline expectations for Salas heading back to High A now? Like you mentioned, he might be now power over hit. Where do you sort of see the strikeouts being for him against High A pitching? Like, do you expect him to sort of get into a groove early, or do you think there's going to be just some kind of figuring it out that would be perfectly reasonable to expect from any 17-year-old?
Right, for sure. I don't think I'd be surprised by anything, and I don't mean that to be like I'm avoiding the question in any way. Like, I do think he's advanced enough as a hitter. The fact that he could probably strike out 20 to 25% of the time, keep that in check. And we see this with catchers a lot, right? Like, catchers know the strike zone better than any other hitter because they're involved with the strike zone so much on the defensive side. So I don't think that's a big issue for him. It's more for me, it's cold in Fort Wayne. It's cold in the Midwest League. If he gets off to a slow start, is that because he can't adjust to the pitching? We saw this with Jackson Merrill last year too, by the way. He got off to a slow start with the Tin Caps. Part of that was, I think, weather related. Just playing baseball in Indiana in April ain't easy by any means. But I could also see him being so advanced with that strike zone knowledge to get off to a solid start and then just grow from there and be back in San Antonio by June, maybe. So I don't know. I'm prepared for all options with Ethan Salas. And after what he did last year, I mean, nothing surprises me in the positive direction. And if things regress a little bit, I wouldn't be surprised either, because he's still just a 17-year-old.
Yeah, and I guess when I was asking earlier if Sebastian Walcott's going to be the youngest player at High A, I should have just checked where Ethan Salas is getting assigned. It will not be Sebastian Walcott who's the youngest player at High A. It will be Ethan Salas. And speaking of colder spring affiliates, got a question in the chat wondering where Josue DePaula of the Dodgers is getting assigned. Do you happen to know, is he going to Great Lakes at all, or is that still TBD?
I think he's going to Rancho Cucamonga.
Oh, he's going back to
yeah, I believe that's where he's opening the year. I understand, like, wanting to get aggressive with him, and after he spent last year at Rancho and held him up pretty well. It was only 74 games though, so like, being as young as he is and only 18, turning 19 in May, you kind of want to push him out and put him to Great Lakes. But I think he's opening the year with Rancho. Let me just confirm that real quick.
Sure. And my next pick, while Sam's looking that up, is going to be Kyle Carr of the Yankees. It's not unheard of for a college starter to be assigned to High A directly without pitching professionally, but I think it's noteworthy that the Yankees sent Carr to high A for the beginning of his pro career, just because we saw what happened with Drew Thorpe and Chase Hampton last year, with those guys just sort of their prospect stock explodes at high A. And I wonder if Carr, you know, Baseball America has been really pumping up Carr, especially how he looked in the spring. I think you could argue Kyle Carr is maybe more highly touted now than Thorpe or Hampton were a year ago. So I'm interested to see how the lefty Carr does with that assignment to high A Hudson Valley. What do you make of that? And kind of conversely, you could compare it to Reds first rounder Rhett Lauder, who also got assigned to high A. So the Yankees are giving Kyle Carr the exact assignment the Reds gave Rhett Lauder.
Yeah, I mean, and just to circle back to DePaulo real quick, he isn't starting in Rancho, so he's going back to single A to start the year. But Rhett Lauder was honestly very surprising to me. I thought he would have been a candidate to open at double A, and maybe he was, but like, given how advanced he is, how much he fills up the zone, that stuff's going to play everywhere. So kind of get aggressive with him. I'm surprised the Reds are reeling him in a little bit to at least start the year. You know, like we've been saying, that could be a 3-4 start assignment. We'll see. But with Kyle Carr, yeah, I mean, it feels like every year we're talking about somebody the Yankees draft, and then they get him in their pitching lab in Tampa, and he emerges as a completely different pitcher and dominates right out of the gate. The fact that, like you said, Carr, he's number 12 on our list right now, has a better profile than Drew Thorpe did at this point last year. It's fastball slider that are above average pitches. Like, if those become even sharper, he adds even more velo. I mean, that we could see him zooming as well. And they didn't really get that aggressive with Drew Thorpe last year. He probably should have been in double A by July. They kind of held him on that Hudson Valley staff longer than I expected. So we'll see how they treat Carr, but I think he is more advanced coming out of the gate than Thorpe was.
Yeah. I mean, would not surprise me at all if Kyle Carr's numbers are crazy through like 4 or 5 starts, just based on what Hampton and Thorpe did last year. Do you got anyone else, Sam? I've got a couple, I've got like 1 or 2 stragglers. But do you got anyone else you want to talk about?
Yeah, one other I'll just touch on real quick. Sure. Somebody who's been the talk of spring on the backfields was Blake Walters, the Kansas City Royals second round pick last year. They spent $2.8 million to sign him using some of the savings they got with Blake Mitchell, who was their first overall pick, or their first round pick, I should say. Blake Walters, fastball is up to 98. He's got a really good slider. They seem impressed by the steps forward that the changeup has done. He's going to open the year at single A Columbia, which doesn't seem very aggressive, but actually the MO for Kansas City the last few years, they've drafted high school pitching pretty consistently, and then they hold those guys back and extended for a month or two to let them get lengthened out, and then they push them out to an affiliate. They're not doing that with Walters. They think he's too advanced to hold him back and extended. He might not be getting these, like we've been saying, 4 or 5 inning starts in April. It might be 3-4 innings to start, but at least he's going with the Fireflies, which is certainly telling to me. They didn't do this with Ben Kuderna. They didn't do this with Frank Mazzucato, who was their first round pick a few years ago. They are doing it with Blake Walters, and this is a pretty strong indication of what Kansas City thinks it has in Walters. And it wouldn't surprise me at all. We have him at number 7 right now. It wouldn't surprise me if he's their top pitching prospect by the midseason and flirting at least with the top 100.
Yeah, you talked about how Walters was the talk of the backfields. You know, you don't have to be a professional scout to sort of see the upside when you watch him deliver the baseball. Just 6'6", extremely athletic. And, you know, touching 98, you could easily see this guy just sitting like 98, 99 when he gets into his 22, 23, just given how big he is and how athletic he is and how hard he's throwing right now. So, yeah, Walters, that's a big vote of confidence. I expect just a ton of hype, like a ton of Blake Walters gifts on Twitter and stuff like that if he's having success, because the stuff is incredibly loud. I'll just close it off here with Alfredo Duno of the Reds. He also got the Yofre Rodriguez jump, played in the DSL last year was obviously the Reds kind of prize signee last year on January 15th. And he did very well in the Dominican Summer League. But another catcher with an aggressive assignment here. And, you know, I think the big thing with Duno, really, it's hard to kind of find any flaws in what he did in the DSL. It's just sort of, this is a massive 18-year-old catcher, and it's just going to be interesting to see what the body looks like in a few years. So do you have any thoughts on Duno jumping over complex ball?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's just a really good sign of what they think they have in him. He's supposed to be a really good defensive catcher, or at least above average. He's got a strong throwing arm. I think that probably factors into this, is that they think he can work with the staff at single A. You know, one fascinating part to me about this is normally when we're talking guys going to the Florida State League, it's because their spring training complexes are there. So it's like at least somewhat familiar. This isn't that. The Reds are based out of Arizona. They have their single A affiliate in Daytona. It's a completely different thing. It's like pushing them out to high A essentially in terms of environment. So yeah, it's a strong vote of confidence in him. He's only 18. He's going to be 18 for the entire season. I think the bat's going to be a little bit behind, but the Reds are going to point to his defense and say, like, this is why we really sent him here. It's because the glove is going to play quickly. How it's going to age, we'll see. Like you said, he's listed at 6'2", 210 pounds now, only at 18. What happens when he fills out a little bit? Maybe he goes like the Francisco Alvarez route. I remember talking about Alvarez, and people thought he was kind of built like a bowling ball a few years ago. And he's really leaned out by the time he got the majors. He's added strength. He was always strong, but he's really become leaner and more athletic. Maybe that's the path Duno takes.
Yeah, different body types.
Yeah, totally.
And right. I definitely thought – I remember seeing Alvarez in person like a year or two ago, and I was just like, hey, you know what? He's actually not – he's not, like, out of shape at all. He's actually in pretty good shape for what I was kind of expecting. So, yeah, that will be interesting. Sam, before I let you go, do you have any thoughts on the Complex League schedule moving up at all, and whether or not or how that might affect the assignments of players that get drafted? Because obviously the Complex League schedule will be basically wrapping up after a lot of these guys – when a lot of these guys sign after getting drafted. So is that just going to make for – just some very entertaining backfield games that aren't that people aren't keeping scores on, or is it going to lead to just a bunch of guys that might have gotten assigned a complex ball heading to single A?
Yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating on the front end. I like that we're going to get to see some of these guys coming over from the DSL earlier. We're not having to sit around until June to hear about what they're doing or how they're performing. We're going to get to see it earlier on the front end. And I definitely enjoy that part of it. I think it's going to be chaos on the back end, to be honest with you, because of when the draft is happening, when guys are getting signed. I think you're probably going to see more of the college guys get pushed immediately to single A because you want those guys getting at bats. You want them kind of continuing their momentum. But high school guys, yeah, I think it's probably more rest at the complexes and some backfields games and then going into instructs. That, you know, it's going to be whispers about how they're doing instead of seeing it in actual, like how much weight were we really putting on complex league games at the end of the summer? Anyways, you can take or leave it. I was looking at like Arjun Namala's stats earlier, and it was just about a dozen games in the FCL. That doesn't change how I view him as a prospect.
Right.
It's still nice to have numbers to point to, but it's not affecting it that much. But yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see everybody kind of feels their way out of this and how different orgs treat it.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost kind of, we'll be sort of waiting in sort of August, like, is anyone or any of these high school guys going to get assigned to single A? Like Walker Jenkins, you know, like Walker Jenkins splits time last year between the complex league and single A. But we knew how he was doing in complex ball. So we were just like, yeah, he's killing it. And then he goes to single A. And then it's just going to be kind of like a mystery. Like we might find out like, oh man, like this guy is actually getting assigned to single A. He must've been doing really well on the backfields.
Max Clark did the same thing. And then Max Clark struggled out of the gate in the FSL, but he needed those reps. So like you said, we're not going to have the evidence to point to of like, I can clearly see why this happened, but we can probably piece it together when somebody pops up at single A at 18 years old.
Well, this was awesome. Second year in a row we've done this, Sam, and definitely can't recommend the MLB pipeline content enough. You guys are last year we did it after you guys had already released all of your articles of where the top 30 players are going to start the year. And I kind of like that we did it this year sort of right before the start of the rest of the affiliated leagues on Friday. But you guys are still releasing those. So I don't know if you want to kind of plug any of that or what you guys got going on at the site.
Yeah. I mean, if anybody wants to go to MLB.com/pipeline, we're going to be doing all week starting spot stories for our top 30 prospects. We'll let you know where they're started. Sometimes we'll have updates on injuries if guys didn't break with the roster. I really enjoy doing those. It feels like putting the puzzle together every year. And then we have complimentary pieces being written by the beat writers as well. So if you go to team sites, they'll be breaking down most interesting prospects to watch at each level as well. So we've got some complimentary pieces all up over MLB.com. But yeah, this was a blast to do again this year. I'm really excited to get the season started and we can actually talk about results again. We're doing that on the AAA side. Let's do it for everybody else real soon.
Amen to that. Sam Dykstra, MLB Pipeline, thank you so much for joining me today, and have another episode next week.